try the other one now.
Recently, Bert Sutcliffe, New Zealand's outstanding opening left-hand bat, was awarded New Zealand's most outstanding sportsman of the year in a Dominion-wide contest. Yesterday, Sutcliffe was named by Wisden's Cricketers' Almanac 1950 as one of the five cricketers of the year. The other four were all Englishmen: Bailey Essex, Jenkins Worcestershire, Simpson Nottinghamshire, and John Langridge of Sussex. Bert Sutcliffe's honour did not, we're sure, come as a surprise to anyone who'd followed this great cricketer's career. It started at Takapuna Grammar School, Auckland, where he played both cricket and rugby, and quickly he became, as one can well imagine, the school's hero. At 16, Sutcliffe represented Auckland in the Brabin Shield team, and he scored 119 against Canterbury. He served overseas and played with success in service teams. Sutcliffe's record for the past four seasons speaks for itself. His total runs in New Zealand are 2,678, and in 1947-48, his total of 747 runs is a New Zealand cricket record. In England last year, Sutcliffe's 2,627 runs is yet another record. But when we remember how Bert Sutcliffe had a run of bad luck and it took him all his time to get into double figures, this total is even more creditable. Frank Mooney, New Zealand's outstanding wicketkeeper, said on his return to New Zealand that Sutcliffe's great determination and willpower were chiefly responsible for his getting back into form in England. Sutcliffe is a great batsman, but his fielding is something to be seen to be appreciated. His absolute ease in taking the ball, even when running, and back the ball goes to the wicketkeeper in one movement. The statement from Wisden reads as follows: "Cricket history contains the names of no cricketer from New Zealand who at the age of 25 has established such claims to fame as Bert Sutcliffe, whose performances as a member of last season's team from the Dominion stamped him as one of the best left-handed batsmen in the world today. His rise in the cricket world has been as meteoric indeed. A fitting honour to one of New Zealand's most outstanding cricketers, Bert Sutcliffe."
The Lost World, adapted for broadcasting by Peggy Wells from the story by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Episode 3, The Edge of Terror. A line of red cliffs towering from 500 to 1,000 feet above the Amazonian jungle. Remote and sinister, hiding its own secrets from the party of four adventurers who came in quest of a lost world. Professor Challenger.
There is the plateau, gentlemen. Can even your limited intelligence doubt that?
Professor Summerlee.
You brought us to a plateau, sir. I admit that. Now, can you show us a way up?
Lord John Roxton.
There must be a way up, you know. If we circle round the base of the cliffs until we find it.
And Edward Malone, the young journalist of the party.
But there didn't seem to be any way up. And deep down inside us, we were all afraid there mightn't be. There were the cliffs, looming larger as we came into their shadow. There was the huge pinnacle of rock with the tree on top of it. As high as the cliffs, yes, but separated from the cliffs by 40 feet of space.
It was on that tree, gentlemen, that the pterodactyl was perched. Of course, Professor Summerlee will understand that when I speak of a pterodactyl, I mean a stork. Only it's a kind of stork which has no feathers, a leathery skin, membranous wings, and teeth in its jaws.
As Professor Challenger spoke of his pterodactyl, I saw for the first time no sneer on Professor Summerlee's thin lips. On the contrary, a grey, drawn look of excitement and amazement. All that afternoon we trekked to get close to the cliffs, and we made our camp at the very base of the rock pinnacle. Then we held a council of war to decide the best way of ascending to the plateau above us. Professor Challenger presided.
I need not say that on the occasion of my last visit, I exhausted every means of climbing the cliff. And where I failed, I do not think anyone else is likely to succeed, for I am something of a mountaineer. I had none of the appliances of a rock climber with me, but I've taken the precaution to bring them now. With their aid, I am positive I could climb that detached pinnacle to the summit. But so long as the main cliff overhangs, it's useless to attempt ascending that.
There seems to be only one sensible course. Let us split up into two parties, eastward and westward along the base of the cliff, and seek for a practicable point for our ascent.
I agree with Professor Summerlee. The odds are that this plateau is of no great size, and if we travel around it, we shall either find an easy way up or come back to the point from which we started.
There is no easy way up, Lord John, but I admit that there is a point where ascent is possible.
How do you know, sir?
Because, Professor Summerlee, my predecessor, Maple White, actually made such an ascent. How otherwise could he have seen the? Could we have seen the monastery?
Today in New Zealand history. July the 24th, Sergeant Dick Travers, VC.
We commemorate today the deeds of the New Zealand soldier who was known as Dick Travers. Sergeant Richard Charles Travers, VC, DCM, MM, Croix de Guerre of the Otago Regiment. For his gallantry and resource when fighting in the enemy lines at Rossignol Wood on July the 24th, 1918, he was awarded the Victoria Cross.